The British Broadcasting Corporation presents London Forum, the weekly program in which we bring prominent personalities to the microphone to discuss important topics of the day. This is Robert McKenzie introducing this week's London Forum. Tonight we're tackling this question. What are the prospects for British emigration to the Commonwealth? And we've got a team that I think is very well qualified to tackle it. First, may I introduce Mr. F.H. Hinsley, who is a modern historian and fellow of St. John's College, Cambridge. And second, Professor Nicholas Manser, who was born in Ireland and who is now Professor of Commonwealth Relations at the Royal Institute of International Affairs here in London. And the third member of our team, Professor G.L. Wood, an Australian, who is Professor of Commerce at the University of Melbourne, and member of an Australian government commission which is vitally concerned with the problems of development of Australia. As you'll agree, I think that's a well-balanced team with most parts of the Commonwealth, in a sense, in area interested and concerned. And now a background word about our subject, which, as I've said, is the prospects of British migration to the Commonwealth. Just one or two points to sharpen the issue for you. Obviously, of course, there is a startling discrepancy in the fact that two-thirds of the white population of the Commonwealth is centered here in these islands, which are themselves about 1/100 of the area of the Commonwealth. Britain is, of course, one of the most densely populated countries in the world. Australia, New Zealand, and Canada are amongst the lowest densities of populations of the countries of the world. Canada, with a population perhaps twice that of Greater London, and an area, in fact, greater than that of the continental United States. Australia, with a population of 8.25 million, New Zealand, just over 2 million, and so on. So on the face of it, it would seem that it was a very strong case indeed for mass migration of population from these islands here to the various sections of the Commonwealth. And I'd like to begin by asking the question of you gentlemen, is there indeed as strong a case as there would seem on the surface for mass movement of population from Britain to the various member nations of the Commonwealth? Professor Wood, how do you feel about it?
Well, I feel that there is a very good case indeed. Speaking as an economist in this connection, I would say that it was economically desirable to transplant people from one area to another in order to equalize the standards of living in both countries, to increase world production, if you like, but more essentially to improve the marriage of resources to the numbers of the people and to equalize economic security.
And how do you feel about it, Professor Manser?
Well, I agree that there is a strong case on paper for emigration from this country to the other members of the Commonwealth. But I think it's got to be admitted that the natural period for emigration from this country outward is probably over. For 300 or 400 years, we've seen a remarkable extension of the British people all over the globe. But the present population trends do suggest that though that period's not at an end, it is nearing its end.
Mr. Hinsley, how do you feel about our basic question?
Well, I think there's an overwhelming case for some redistribution of population within the Commonwealth. Of course, as you suggested in your introductory remarks, there's a difference between the appearances of this problem on the surface and in actuality. Take, for example, my point of view as a historian on this subject. This maldistribution or uneven distribution of the white population of the Commonwealth to which you referred. Now, historically, that's been a source of strength as well as a source of weakness. In the past, and there are very few historians who would deny that the advantages haven't outweighed the disadvantages in the last 100 years.
Up till now.
Up till now. Mm. But the question is whether that's going to remain the case. And in my view, it is not going to remain the case. And whether or not, of course, you agree with me depends upon the estimate you make of the long-run trend. Both from this point, the point of view of this country, from the point of view of the individual Commonwealth nation, and from the point of view of the Commonwealth as a whole. It's not simply a matter of the temporary state of our problems, but
of the relative long-term situation of the Commonwealth and the individual members in the world.
Now, I wonder, Mr. Hensley, if we could just take that division you suggested of the problem in the latter part of your remarks, namely the point of view on the one hand of the dominions, as they were once called, the member states of the Commonwealth, and on the other hand, the point of view of Great Britain herself. Let's look, first of all, at the point of view of the member nations of the Commonwealth. What do they feel about the question of receiving large blocks of population from Britain? What are their problems? What are the difficulties, and so on? Professor Wood, you'd be the logical opener, I think, on that, as an Australian.
Well, I would say that the vast mass of opinion in Australia would lean very greatly towards preference, towards reception of British people, peoples of British stock. That, however, would not in itself represent a prejudice against peoples from other countries. We would feel, as a people, that it is easier to adapt and assimilate into the population people who have been brought up under similar economic conditions, who have similar political concepts, who have less to learn, so to speak, in adapting themselves to an environment which they already understand broadly.
Well, I quite sympathize with what Wood's been saying, but I would like to ask him a question. Area is a very misleading factor in these discussions. What does he think the realistic estimate of the population of Australia, allowing for the maintenance of its present standard of living? How many people could it absorb each year?
Well, this is a matter, of course, to which a very great deal of attention has been given, and upon which a very great deal of controversy has leaked out into print in various ways. I would say that the average point of view, which is all that we can use at this moment, of people who are entitled to be regarded as experts, would be, at the existing standard of living, somewhere between 25 and 30 million. Nobody has ventured to say more than that, because one-third of the continent is virtually uneconomic wasteland. Another third of it is sparse pasture. The other third contains the real resources upon which the millions of the future must be largely based.
May I just put another point to Wood there? And that is, I suppose, it's still the same, the opinion of most Australians, what they think of is, in terms of immigration, that does, in fact, allow them to maintain their existing standards of living.
Roughly, yes.
But may I interrupt there? I mean, whatever the controversy is about the, shall we say, pleasant capacities of each of these dominions in terms of what they could take in operation, I think we'd agree, I think everybody would agree, that about the single, simple fact that they are all at present underpopulated.
That would be true for Australia.
I think that is true for Canada with 13.5 million. It's true for New Zealand with 2.25. It's true for Australia with just over 8, isn't it?
That's
now, the sort of ways in which you can see that, and again, I'm talking purely as a historian on this matter. I've been to each of these dominions, but only for a very short time. In all sorts of ways, you can see the effects of too lower density of population in each of those Commonwealth countries. You can see it in the fact, for example, the economy of each of them is too narrowly based, and the density of population isn't adequate for a transfer of the economy of the country to a wider basis. For example, of the three, the only one that is in any way relatively highly urbanized is Australia. The others lack the population for urbanization. Now, since the war, of course, they're all beginning to try to become industrial nations for the first time. But they can't do it without population.
I think there's an ambiguity there. We talk of urbanization in terms of concentration of population within administrative cities. I imagine you really have in mind is industrialization.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And industrialization in Australia is a fairly well-developed. Colin Clark has said that comparing with other countries, Australia is one of the most highly industrialized countries of the world in relation to the size of its population and resources at the present time. I don't go all the way with him in that, but it's getting somewhere near a point of view of a balanced economy between rural and factory industries, which is highly important.
But what were you getting at, Hensley, exactly?
Well, I'm not quite sure I saw your point.
I mean, suppose you break this problem down, you see, into three ways. Now, just to put my point simply, I think that the Commonwealth countries that we've referred to, if they are not already suffering, will suffer from the low level of population that they present possess, unless something is done about it, in three main directions. They will suffer politically. Now, for example, Mr. Casey in Australia, a short time ago, announced that if Australia does not increase her population by 200,000 a year for the next 30 years, the right of Australians to possess that territory will be challenged. Then take the economic situation. I've already mentioned, Professor Wood may correct me on this, I'm not an economist, but it may be the case that Australia is relatively highly industrialized. But there's no doubt whatever, I think, that the economy as a whole of Australia and of all the other three Commonwealth countries we've referred to is much too simple. It ought to be more complex. For instance, it's based too dangerously on the export of raw materials. Of course, that fits in with this country's requirement for raw materials, admittedly.
Or foodstuffs.
And for foodstuffs, you say. Well, that's a tremendous danger, biologically speaking, for the future.
You're suggesting that these arguments...
They add up
to a case for an urgent program of reallocation of population.
Now, may I mention a point there, which we haven't mentioned so far, and which is fundamental by way of understanding the problem, and that is that the white populations of the world, with the exception of South America and Russia, are declining, you see. So much so that without the intervention of some extraneous factor, like immigration, the population of Australia and New Zealand and South Africa, the white population, and Canada, will begin to decline by 1970, without any doubt at all. And in this country, for example, this country's population, which is in the same, the white populations as a whole, with the two exceptions I mentioned, are in the same boat, this country is undoubtedly leveling out now in population, and we will not increase after 1980. We shall go down. Now, you've got, therefore, to face this problem, not in the light of the Dominion's present population, but in the light of an undoubted demographic fact that they are all going to go down in terms of their present total populations, unless something is done extraneously.
Yes. But, of course, I disagree with Hinckley on one point there. You don't increase European population merely by immigration from one part...
By redistribution.
By redistribution of it. Is that the fundamental to this whole issue, is what degree of redistribution is desirable as between the countries of the Commonwealth.
Certainly. But I do want to make that point clear, that unless something is done, you see, the population of Australia, which is at present 8 and a bit millions, will, after 1980, begin to decline. To decline dangerously.
And that lies behind, Professor Wood, your argument, too, for large-scale migration, as large as you can possibly absorb and as fast as you can absorb it.
Yes, well, it is true, I think, to say that, unfortunately, we can't plan in terms of 1980. Mm-hmm. We've got to term plans of something much nearer than that for reasons which I needn't go into.
But what are your limiting factors now that hold up larger-scale movement into Australia, as far as you're concerned?
Oh, there are several. There are, first of all, the problem of industrial power, the provision of industrial power to provide employment. Far more important and urgent and immediate, however, is the problem of housing. I know that there are thousands of nominations for assisted emigration now waiting in the files of Australia House, but it is impossible to allot them to Australia, to give them passages in ships, even if the ships are provided, because it isn't possible to find the sponsors for residence in a hurry.
May I suggest that? Sorry.
We are seriously short
of accommodation, even for the population which exists in Australia, quite apart from the new population which we hope to attract.
Well, I agree that problem of housing, of course, is general throughout the Commonwealth. It's just
certainly bad, true in Canada too.
Bad is difficult in Canada, in southern Rhodesia, as it is in Australia.
It's almost a universal world problem.
Yes, and of course, in recent years, added to it, and particularly in the immediate post-war years, was the difficulty of shipping. There was, to my mind, clearly a psychological moment after the war when people in this country had been unsettled by wartime conditions, when a lot of young men and women would have been psychologically prepared to emigrate. They couldn't get the shipping, then they settled down to jobs at home. They think now less of immigration.
May I add there, too, that there is another factor about this. That is, that this problem, however much the Commonwealth countries feel intensely about it, and for very good reasons at the moment, is not being sufficiently coordinated between those countries and this country on a sufficiently high level. I mean, just take an ordinary, shall we say, statistical fact about this housing problem. Supposing you staged your emigration so that it was done in stages over a long period. It would obviously have to be done over a long period. And supposing you arranged for a large number of builders to be in the first wave. Well, I have seen it argued, though I think this is a little facetious, but it's worth thinking about, that if you put enough builders into the first wave, you would solve two things in one blow. You would solve the housing problem in Great Britain by moving the first wave.
After a time,
and you would also solve the building of houses at the receiving end.